From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Thank you. Great show for you today. Later on this hour, former White House Press Secretary Scott McClellan will be our guest to play our game. Now, I know you might be saying to yourself, Scott has been on every single talk show from Letterman to Fresh Air. The question is, why one more media appearance? What's left to say? Well, I would remind you that our game for our celebrity guests involves answering questions about things you know nothing about. And as he reveals in his memoir, that's exactly what he was doing during his years at the White House. Although, as it turns out, he didn't know he was doing that. He'll explain. Anyway, he'll be totally ready for us. But are you? Call us up at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, Peter. This is Fred from Douglas, Massachusetts.
Hey, how are things in Douglas?
Oh, fantastic. Have you
ever been to Douglas State Forest?
Absolutely, all the time.
That is where I was a forest ranger for 3 summers when I was in college.
Really?
No kidding. Wallam Lake.
Wallam Lake. You bet.
Wait. You were a forest ranger?
I was.
No.
Did you wear the hat? No, they didn't give us hats. They gave us Smokey the Bear patches, which I still
love. Oh, yeah. Awesome.
We weren't hat rangers. We were undercover rangers.
Fred, welcome to our show. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to a Boston Globe writer and author most recently of Moving the Chains, Tom Brady and the Pursuit of Everything, Mr. Charlie Pierce. Say hello to him. Next, say hello to the woman behind the syndicated advice column Ask Amy, Ms. Amy Dickinson. And lastly, a humorist and author, most recently of Long Time Leaving, Dispatches from Up South, Mr. Roy Blunt, Jr.
Popular.
Fred, you're going to play Who's Carl this time. Carl Castle will start us off by reenacting 3 quotations from the week's news. If you can correctly identify or explain just 2 of them, you'll win our prize. Carl Castle's voice on your home answering machine. Ready to play?
Yes, I am.
Here's your first quote.
In 2006... former President George Bush did it with Anna Kournikova at a celebrity tennis event, and he was 82 at the time.
That was Jim Rutenberg of the New York Times talking about a gesture that Barack and Michelle Obama did as they took the stage to claim victory last week that a lot of people got real excited about. What?
That would be the so-called terrorist fist bump?
The terrorist fist bump,
terrorist,
yes.
No. Terrorist fist jab.
All right. We'll get to it. As Obama took the stage the night of the last primary, he was seen on national TV giving a little fist bump, or as the hip kids say, a dap, to his wife, followed by a thumbs up. So everybody goes nuts. Cable news shows are examining it. They're playing it in slow-mo like the Zapruder tape. What does this mean, this knuckly percussion? On Fox News, anchor E.D. Hill introduced a segment on it by saying, quote, a fist bump, a pound, a terrorist fist jab, the gesture everyone seems to interpret differently, unquote. Her show was subsequently canceled. We say, you know, Barack and Michelle Obama can do anything they like. They can fist bump, they can high five, they can leap up and bump their chests as long as they do not subject us to another Al and Tipper Gore lip lock, please.
Instead of a fist bump, they could do the bump. You know, like, dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun.
That's the hustle.
Oh, that's the hustle. What was the bump?
I don't know if it was ever a song. I think the bump was just sort of a thing. I don't think it ever had a theme song.
I don't want to do the bump with no big fat woman. Remember that?
Yeah, that's right. That was a very good song. And
I wrote that song.
I didn't think it was possible. We're sounding even less hip than E.D. Hill.
I was about to say.
I mean, did she really think that, you know, in the caves at Tora Bora, they were all sort of sitting there going to each other? I mean,
she, in fairness to her, she was quoting something else in the tease.
Yes.
It was just a tease gone bad.
Mm-hmm. It was a tease gone bad.
Yeah, it was, but you know.
All right, let's move on.
Yeah.
Here is your next quote.
I will veto every single beer. A bill.
That was someone who either was showing his age or doing his best to lose the frat boy vote in November. Who?
That'd be John McCain.
It would be. So everybody's going on about the Obama fist bump. And his opponent tries to get the conversation back to the real issue of the campaign. Mainly, is John McCain losing it, or is he just messing with our heads? So, as you heard, John McCain was trying to make a strong statement about what he would do to bills with earmarks, and instead he denounced beer. What was it? Why was he thinking of that? Had he been told that he needs to stop drinking it if he doesn't want to get up every 2 hours? What?
Isn't Cindy sort of in the beer business?
Cindy is in the beer business. Yeah. Actually, the best explanation is he was going to say bill with year marks. Mm. Bill,
oh,
year.
Beer.
Beer.
Right.
I think I saw Jane Goodall do this act.
Still, you know, nonetheless, it's this kind of campaign, constant defense, constant attack. Senator Obama aggressively responded to a slip-up. He said that while the McCain-Bush policy was to veto beer, he would support the right of all Americans to enjoy beer, which Obama says he's been told is a refreshing hops-based beverage oft enjoyed by the common folk. All right, here is your last quote.
Damn! I spent $399 on mine, and now they're selling it for $199. I hate you, Apple!
That was a California man named Stan Roberts. He was giving the San Francisco Chronicle his reaction to the newly unveiled what?
The iPhone.
Right! Ooh. It's been a year since Apple launched the phone that has become the de facto mistress of many a tech geek. And so once again, the crowds gathered to watch Steve Jobs don his magical mock turtleneck, ascend to the stage at an Apple convention in the manner of Moses with rimless glasses, and reveal to us all his latest exciting innovation, namely that all 5 million of us who bought the thing last year are suckers! The new and improved iPhone, iPhone 3G, was designed in response to some of the complaints about the first version, that it was too slow, that it lacked certain functions businesses need, and that it never ever said, I love you, back. Really, I said to my iPhone, I'll never leave you for a younger version. I won't.
But what if she's really cheap?
Yeah. And I am told the new version is somewhat slimmer.
Yeah.
So.
I think you might be buying two after that.
Carl, how did Fred do in our quiz?
Fred was perfect, Peter. Three correct answers, so Fred, you win our prize.
Well done, Fred.
All right, Fred.
Telephone ring, telephone ring, telephone ring.
Telephone, won't you ring? I've been waiting here for such a long time.
We want to remind everyone they can join us here at the Chase Auditorium in downtown Chicago. For tickets and more information, go to chicagopublicradio.org, or you can find a link at our website, waitwait.npr.org. Right now, panel, it is time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Charlie, in Sydney, Australia, the judge in a major drug trial declared a mistrial after it was determined that during the presentation of evidence, a number of jurors had done what?
Not listening, sleeping.
Not quite. Once again, just Will Shorts has personally short-circuited.
What, they were doing crossword puzzles in the jury box?
Actually, they were doing Sudoku. 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 Too many vowels. Sudoku. That's what the jurors were doing instead of paying attention. A trial that had gone on for 4 months and cost taxpayers $1 million was thrown out over naughty jurors playing Sudoku. Thank you. The foreman of the jury, yes, thank you, admitted that four or five jurors were Sudoku-y for at least half the trial. They said, quote, some of the evidence is rather drawn out, and I find it difficult to maintain my attention the whole time, and that doesn't distract me too much from proceedings. A lawyer for the defense said she knew something was up. Quote, I noticed they were writing in all different directions, and straight away I thought, they're not taking notes like we thought they were. Roy, the Wall Street Journal reported this week on the scourge of dogs attacking their owners' Roombas. Those are those disc-shaped automatic robot vacuum cleaners.
Oh, sure.
Apparently it's a real problem. The best way to stop your dog from attacking the Roomba is to do what to the Roomba in front of the dog?
Bossa Nova.
Do what to the Roomba?
Yeah.
Just humiliate it in some way.
Exactly right. Just scold the Roomba.
Ah.
That's the strategy.
Oh, yeah.
As in bad Roomba. Bad, bad, bad. apparently dogs and cats are not big fans of these Roombas, which suddenly come out of their little hiding place and scurry around the floor.
Yeah.
The Journal reports that internet discussion boards are filled with horror stories about dog owners returning home to find their Roombas in pieces. The solution, chastise the vacuum cleaner in front of the dog. Everybody wins. The Roomba understands where it fits in the household hierarchy. The dog sees that you don't love the Roomba more than it, so it knows where it fits in the pecking order. And you can take pride in that while every day you let the world trample on you, man, you just totally reamed out your vacuum cleaner.
Until the first Roomba strikes back. We've got a movie on our hands.
That would be totally cool. You'd be like, could you clean the floor, please? No.
It's really very clean, Dave.
I said vacuum the floor. I'm afraid I can't do that, Dave.
I can't do that, Dave.
And by the way, I just vacuumed Rover.
Where's the dog? What dog? Coming up, former White House Press Secretary Scott McClellan gets caught in our web of deception when he plays Not My Job. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Pabst Brewing, proud supporter of local artists nationwide and of the NPR Live and Concert Series online at PabstBlueRibbon.com. The John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, helping to build a more just future for the nation and the world at MacFound.org. And Angie's List, providing firsthand consumer reviews on local service like plumbers, painters, movers, and now doctors. Details at angieslist.com. We'll be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR, National Public Radio.
From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Amy Dickinson, Roy Blunt Jr., and Charlie Pierce. And here again is your host at the Chase Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, sir. Right now it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game on the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Chris Olson from Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Hey, Chris, how are things in Green Bay?
Wet.
I bet. Are you still mourning the loss of Brett Favre?
Actually, I'm not a big football fan.
What?
Yeah, exactly. You know, you tell people that here, it's like you're coming out of the closet or something. Oh, you don't like football? You need to meet my friend Steve. I didn't like football either.
But they're becoming more tolerant of you people, I understand.
So
that's
I hope
great.
So.
That's great. Well, welcome to our show, Chris. You're going to play our game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Chris's topic?
It's summertime and the living is easy. But I want things to be easier, dagnabbit.
Finally, it's summer, and like most Americans, we are looking forward to putting in a lot of effort in order to do as little as possible. This week we read about a new innovation that will make our leisure time even more leisurely. Our panelists will tell you about three such great leaps forward. Of course, only one of them is real. Pick that real one. You will win our prize. Ready to play?
Yes.
All right. First, let's hear from Roy Blunt, Jr.
You've heard of power naps. Now Leisure Systems, Inc. has introduced the Power Hammock. A retractable brace stabilizes the hammock. 3% of summertime injuries are hammock-related. While you climb into it and until you're sure you're ready to dangle. With fingertip controls, you can set yourself a rocking at various speeds, with or without musical accompaniment. And you can mist yourself with a cooling spray or with refreshing natural aromas. And you can raise a net around yourself in case of bugs. Concept flaws, forced withdrawal of the solar-powered model. Alas, you can't run anything on shade. But the standard two-cycle motor is more fuel efficient than most weed whackers, and quieter, too.
The Power Hammock from Roy. Your next story of making the lazy, hazy, crazy days of summer even lazier, hazier, and crazier comes from Amy Dickinson.
Summer is so annoying. What with the mosquitoes, heat stroke, the New York Yankees. But of course, no summertime activity is more bothersome than having to hold an ice cream cone and slowly twist it while licking up those pesky drips. I mean, could ice cream be a little more trouble? Now, the world's laziest licker has invented the battery-powered ice cream cone. A gadget rotates the cone while the consumer merely has to stick out his tongue while the ice cream passes by. The good news is that it only costs $10, and the company that developed the cone says they're launching a new product for the fall, fast-acting baked beans.
Your last story of a way to slow down even further this summer comes from Charlie Pierce.
The officials at the Cherokee County Fair in Oklahoma will be experimenting this July with a product guaranteed to gladden the hearts of weary parents and their dry cleaners, nonstick cotton candy. Thanks to DARPA, the United States Department of Defense's top secret laboratory usually deals with alien technologies captured from fallen spaceships, a non-sticky sweetener made for desert sea rations called Heatrex 5 will be used in the manufacture of some of the cotton candy at this year's fair. I hope we can maintain the essential integrity of cotton candy while simultaneously making it neater, said fair spokesman Randy Voss. One longtime fairgoer is skeptical. If cotton candy doesn't stick to your face, doesn't that just make it a bowl of sugar on a stick, she said.
All right, let's review your choices. Presumably, this summer, you could enjoy the effort-saving benefits of one of these things. Either from Roy Blunt Jr., a power hammock that rocks you at the speed you select. From Amy Dickinson, a self-turning ice cream cone which rotates the ice cream in front of your tongue. Or from Charlie Pierce, non-stick cotton candy, saving you those sticky moments. Which of these is the real story of a labor-saving innovation for the summer?
They all sound pretty plausible, actually, but I think I'm going to go with the power hammock.
The power hammock. All right. Well, your story then is Roy's of the power hammock. Well, we're so proud we were able to speak to the inventor of this device.
Cone-shaped plastic toy that spins your ice cream automatically, saves you all of that hard work of having to turn the ice cream cone manually.
That was Rick Hartman, professional toy designer, talking about his latest innovation, the motorized ice cream cone holder. I'm so sorry. I'm sorry for you. I'm sorry for my children who will want one, yet not get one. Chris, I'm sorry, because, in fact, as you now know, Amy had the correct answer, the true story. You did, however, pick Roy's, meaning you don't win our prize, but you do earn a point for Roy for simply fooling you.
By the way, Roy, if you don't patent that idea, I'm going to on Monday.
Really?
That's a great one. Thank you so much for playing, Chris.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
And now the game where we ask people to answer questions about something they know nothing about. The game's called Not My Job. After serving with President Bush back when he was governor of Texas and then as assistant press secretary in the White House, Scott McClellan served as the White House press secretary from 2003 to 2006. His new book is called, quite simply, What Happened? Scott McClellan, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Peter, it's good to join everybody.
We're very happy to have you. I have to say, you know, because when you were in the White House, we kind of made fun of you from time to time. And
no.
We did. And I always like having people who we've talked about come on the show, you know, show no hard feelings. No hard feelings, right?
Absolutely not. You got to have a sense of humor about it.
Yeah. Was that true of everybody in the White House? Did people in the White House not necessarily listen to our show, but maybe the other shows that make fun of
I don't know about the vice president.
No, I guess not.
Most everybody.
We used to, around our office, we used to obsessively watch your press conferences. And the thing that you, when you were White House press secretary, and the thing that always amazed us was that no matter what the reporters threw at you, that how hostile the questioning got, and sometimes it did get hostile, you would never lose your cool, you would never get mad, you would never get upset. It was really impressive. And then we've read your book, and even though you report on some things that were, well, upsetting in terms of how you were misled in certain areas, you still don't seem to be that upset about it.
I think that's what happens when you're the youngest of four and you got three older brothers. You learn just to take it and move on and not worry about it too much. But
really?
Anytime I think you saw me smile, you knew I was thinking, what a stupid question. I just couldn't say it out loud.
Really? So that smile when you were seeming so pleasant and patient was really that?
Exactly.
Are you smiling now? So here's the question. What does get you mad?
Well, it's hard to think about that. When the University of Texas loses a football game, I get pretty upset, but that's about it.
Really? Gosh, nothing else. Not the whole Iraq war propaganda thing? That's okay, but... Scooter Libby lying to you? No problem, but when the Longhorns go down...
That's right.
Well, you have talked about a lot of those things in your prior interviews. We wanted to get at some other things that we have discussed about the White House. Just get the inside story from someone who was there and apparently has already burnt his bridges, so you might as well tell the truth. You may remember the incident in which President Bush supposedly choked on a pretzel and passed out.
Yes.
What really happened, Scott?
We don't know. No one was actually there.
Really?
It was just himself and in the White House residence.
And so he came out of the residence. He had some sort of black eye or injury.
That's right. He fell and hit himself on the table after he choked on the pretzel and passed out.
And you're telling me that no one was in the room with him. He said, I choked on a pretzel and I fell over.
That's the story.
And you all said, yes, Mr. President.
I don't think you can make that one up.
He couldn't make that up, maybe, but... But... Do you... All right, but as far as you know, that's what happened. You have no evidence, nothing...
That's correct.
All right. Another story that we talked a lot about on the show was the Angela Merkel back rub incident. Do you remember this one?
Yes. I'd left the White House by that point, but I remember that very well, watching it on TV.
All right. What was going on between the president and Ms. Merkel?
Boy, that was an awkward moment, to say the least. It's one of the ways the president was just trying to show his friendship with her, I think.
You think?
Did he ever do it to you?
Giving her a deep tissue shiatsu.
Yeah.
I mean, that was...
Was that a typical thing for the president? Is that a typical thing for the president? Did he ever do it to you, come around behind you, give you a little rub?
No.
Well, you're not his type.
Something like that. But her reaction told it all. I thought during that moment when she got the back rub.
Her look of abject horror. You mean?
Yeah.
Did he have a nickname for you?
My nickname was just Scotty. That's all he had for me. Nothing fancy.
Do you think you have a nickname now?
I don't think I can say it over the airwaves.
Yeah, I guess not. Another incident. Do you remember when he tried out the Segway? I think it was up in Kennebunkport, was it? Was it Crawford?
Mm.
And you remember he fell off?
The only person that has ever fallen off a Segway.
Right. When that happened, because we saw pictures of it, him toppling forward. Texas boots over tea kettle. What was your job? Was it? I just assumed that everything in the White House is so important and official. Whatever the president does, did your BlackBerry go off and it was like, Scott, we have a situation. The president has fallen off a Segway. We need to make a statement.
Well, we had a lot of fun watching it later on TV ourselves, and I think he had a little fun about it too.
Really? Did you all sit around and like watch it over and over again?
Shaking our heads and getting a good laugh out of it.
Dude, watch! I'm going to set this to music now. Watch.
And we have to ask you about this, and this is, of course, the famous statement that President Bush made as you left the White House on that day back in 06. He said, someday Scott and I will be sitting back on the porch in Texas in our rocking chairs and talking about the good old days. So is that date still in your calendar?
I think we'll be sitting on different porches in different places.
Was there anything that was so awful you couldn't put it in the book? For example, did you ever see Dick Cheney in the sauna, for example?
Not quite like that. There are a few moments that I didn't put in the book that maybe came close.
Save that for the sequel?
Yes, book two.
Okay.
All the best of what was left out of what happened.
Well, Scott McClellan, it is a pleasure to finally talk to you in person as opposed to simply talking about you. And we have invited you here to play a game we're calling...
You're a diminutive gay alcoholic genius and gossip addict.
Since your job in the Bush White House was mostly keeping your mouth shut, we thought we'd ask you three questions about somebody who couldn't stay quiet if his life depended on it. That would be writer Truman Capote, a lifelong gossip and dealer in high society dish.
Scott, just one thing, okay? this is a real question. She can't come back in 3 years and give us the real answer.
All right. Answer 2 out of 3 questions about Truman Capote, and you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice and their home answering machine. Carl, who is Scott McClellan playing for?
Scott is playing for Andy Finley of Spring Hill, Tennessee.
Here, sir, is your first question about Truman Capote. He loved gossip. One could say it was his true profession. He came up with actual gossip competitions, such as which of these? A version of the basketball game horse, if player one described, say, an intimate detail of a celebrity's anatomy, player two had to do the same thing or lose a point. Was it B? He liked to take two disparate people and then try to connect them by shared sexual partners. Or C, everybody in the room takes a drink and holds it, and then the player tries to come up with something so shocking but true that the other players spit their drinks out.
You know, the one that sounds most interesting to me is the one I think I'll go with. They always say go with your first instincts, right?
Right.
I'll go with B.
You're
going to
go with B, the sexual linkage between two disparate people. That's your choice?
That's my choice.
You're right, sir. Very well done. He called the game IDC for International Daisy Chain, and he claimed to have once connected Cab Calloway, the band leader, to Adolf Hitler via a mere 3 bedmates.
So,
wow.
That's impressive. Don't know how he did that. All right, next question. Truman Capote was known for his insults. Famously, he once said of Jack Kerouac's book, On the Road, quote, "That's not writing, that's typing." How did he once describe the writer Lillian Hellman? Did he say, A, quote, "like George Washington in drag"? B, quote, "like a dog in every way, except the good ones"? Or C, quote, "somebody who wouldn't spill her cheap wine on you if you were on fire"? And I'm sparing you my Truman Capote impersonation. I just want you to know.
Let's go with A.
You're going to go with A, George Washington in drag. For a circumspect guy, you're pretty good at this stuff. Yes, that
did
was
good.
You did. That's what he said. All right, let's see if you can do this perfectly, because I will be impressed if you can. Sometimes Truman Capote made people upset. For example, when Saul Bellow won the Nobel Prize for Literature, Capote said he didn't think Bellow deserved it. How did Saul Bellow, Nobel laureate, reply? Did he say, A, quote, "maybe Truman could win a little something for himself if he ever actually wrote something"? B, quote, "I can't see what Truman deserves at all except a kick in the ass"? Or C, "Truman? Truman Capote? Is he still alive?"
Let's go. That's a tough one, those three. I will go with B.
B. You're going to go with B. "I can't see what Truman deserves at all except a kick in the ass"?
Yeah, I'll go with B.
You're right.
Wow.
I don't know. It's interesting. I'll point out to you. Hold on. First of all, let me get the official score. Carl, how did Scott McClellan do in our quiz?
Scott was perfect, Peter. 3 correct answers, so he wins for Andy Finley. Congratulations, Scott.
Very well done.
Thank you.
This is fascinating. You are our 3rd Bush White House press spokesman to be on our show. We've also had Dana Perino and Tony Snow, 2 of the people who followed you.
Right.
And they each only got 1 right. And I'll point out that they, at the time, were both still in the employ of the White House. So it does seem to be that once you leave the White House, suddenly you can see the truth. I don't know how that works.
Maybe I needed multiple choice from the podium some days.
Yeah. I have to say, I'm genuinely concerned, maybe because I've seen you be crucified by your former colleagues. But what's next for you, Scott McClellan? What are you going to do now?
Well, I don't know. I'm thinking about that, whether it's something in the academic world or think tank world or something,
or
something
Disney world.
Still in politics. Yes, go to Disney World,
right.
Exactly. In July, I think I'll take a little time off and get away from all this. But I want to continue working on what I talked about in the book, and I'm exploring some opportunities now.
Well, that's great. Well, we'll look for you wherever you show up. Scott McClellan, we're so glad to have you. Former White House press spokesman Scott McClellan has a book out. It is called What Happened Inside the Bush White House and Washington's Culture of Deception. It's available everywhere. Scott McClellan, thank you so much for being with us today. What a pleasure to have you.
Thank you, Peter. I enjoyed it.
Thank you. This is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Roy Blunt Jr., Charlie Pierce, and Amy Dickinson. And here again is your host at the Chase Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. In just a minute, Carl and a listener will review the news in five-line rhyming verse. If you'd like to play the Listener Limerick Challenge, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Charlie, back to John McCain for a moment. This week, McCain made a play for, quote, disaffected Hillary supporters, unquote, by bragging on his official campaign blog that he is a huge supporter of what?
Climbing Mount Everest. He had the wrong Hillary.
Oh.
Thank you. I'd like to thank the old folks in the audience for that. That was very kind. Run that by me again, Peter, because
I was. He says,
because while you were saying it, I was telling a very unsuccessful joke.
I understand. John McCain has a blog, which is actually very entertaining on his website.
Yeah, it's great.
Very freewheeling.
It's written in Sumerian.
It's cool. And it says, one entry early this week says, attention, disaffected Hillary supporters. Did you know that John McCain is a big supporter of what?
Wow. I mean, I know he had problems with the golf balls on his website this week.
Something we have reported on this show, this fact about John McCain. I'll give you a hint. It's fair because it's apropos because he wants them to take a chance on me.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's right. That's right. He's a very big ABBA fan.
He is a huge fan
of
ABBA.
Yeah, that's right. I did see that.
This is not the first time, as we have reported, that John McCain has bragged of his affinity for the Swedish supergroup. However, the DJs at an Arizona radio station on Monday were surprised when the senator called in and during their chat mentioned that he loves ABBA. He asked them, quote, if it was old-fashioned to like ABBA. And they assured him it was not.
No, it's just... It's
oh,
just
no,
lame.
No. No, Senator, it's great. It's terrific. And you look good. You do.
And also ABBA, said, I mean, those women are in their 70s or 80s by now,
go.
Too.
That's true.
I mean...
He does. He likes to play... John McCain told the DJs that... that he likes to play the song Take a Chance on Me to pump himself up before he goes on stage to do events. And this story was then linked to in the blog, and it was a shout-out to these Hillary supporters. The question is, you know, why would he do this? Is it that it's like McCain's people thought his courage to admit that he, a straight man, liked ABBA would gain him the affection of Hillary's many female supporters? He also said on the blog that on days he feels dumpy and down, he likes to put on his fat pants and eat a whole quart of Häagen-Dazs. Maybe... Amy.
No. Don't look at me.
Amy, we've heard a lot of whining about how much corporate CEOs are getting paid these days. Well, the Wall Street Journal reported this week that some CEOs have contracts that will pay them hundreds of millions of dollars more, in some cases, even if they do what?
Even if they leave the company?
Nope.
They'll be leaving...
They'll be leaving the company of almost everyone.
They'll be leave... Die?
Yes.
No.
If they die. Huh. The journal reported that many CEOs are writing massive death benefits into their contracts.
Wow.
But the problem is, usually they justify these massive payments to the CEOs because, well, they're increasing shareholder value. That's hard to justify for someone who's dead, so it takes some creativity. For example, the CEO of Shaw Group Incorporated is in line to be paid $17 million for not competing with the engineering and construction company after he dies.
Oh. It's the ultimate non-compete.
Yeah.
Poison pill, if you will.
This is good.
But I can also be sure he's not coming back.
So. Yeah. Another CEO of a Texas oil company will get a $158,000 payment that's listed in his contract as a posthumous car allowance.
You know that joke about the guy who's... was too busy to go to his father's funeral, his rich brother, and he called a poor brother back home and said, I can't come to the funeral. Could you just organize everything? But I'll pay for the whole thing. Just send me a bill. And the poor brother said, all right, okay. So the rich brother gets a big, huge bill 1 month and pays it right away. Second month, he gets another bill for $480 and pays it right away. Third month, every month, he's getting a bill for $480. And so he called up the poor brother and said, listen, I'm getting explain this bill I get every month. And he And the poor brother said, well, you said you want to do everything first class. I rented him a tux.
Okay.
All right, I didn't mean for it to go on that long.
Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Christine Guyberson from New York, New York.
Hey, how are things in New York, New York?
Oh, things are fantastic. How's everything in Chicago?
Great, great. I mean, really, it's a happy day for everyone. What do you do there?
I'm a graphic designer.
Oh, cool. What sort of things do you design?
Mostly environmental design, so I do exhibits, signage, wayfinding.
Oh, totally cool.
Wayfinding.
Yeah. I'm sorry, wayfinding? What is that
about? Navigation through space, yeah.
You mean so this way to the exit, that sort of thing?
Yeah.
Continues down the hall, that sort of thing.
Oh, that's really
important. That's important. Yeah. That's if it wasn't for you, we'd all still be wandering around the Field Museum, wondering how the heck to get out of the Ancient Americas exhibit, so... Anyway, welcome to the show, Christine. Carl Castle is going to read you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. Your job, of course, fill in that last word or phrase correctly. On two of the limericks, do that, you will be a winner.
Okay.
Ready to play?
Yes.
Here is your first limerick.
From our honeymoon, we emerged harried, yet the intimate impetus tarried. Making whoopee each night is no right nor a plight, but a miracle. See, 'cause we're...
married.
Yes! You've heard the jokes. You've heard the jokes. What's the best guarantee of sexual abstinence? A wedding ring. Ha ha. But in a case of great minds thinking and doing other things alike, two different married couples, the Mullers, a conservative couple from North Carolina, and the Browns, a more liberal, earthy, crunchy couple from Colorado, both decided, or rather each decided, to have sex every single day and document the experience in a new book. The North Carolina couple's goal was a whole year, 365 days, while the Colorado couple was aiming for just 100 days. Said Ann Brown, one of the 100-day persons, quote, I'm not a quitter. The night he had vertigo, I said, I'm sorry, guy, but you've got to keep going. I don't understand how vertigo is. Like, we'll do it on the floor, I guess. I don't know. Is that an impediment?
Not tonight, honey. I have vertigo.
Just keep one foot on the floor.
That's all you need to do. Now, news reports about the book projects have been widely circulated, as well as laminated, put on refrigerators, left on pillows, pinned to the back of children. Hey, honey, did you read that article? Did you read it yet? Huh? Did you? Huh?
But you know what was cool? What? In both cases, the women were initiated the projects.
Yes, that's true. So as a professional advice person, columnist, would you advise this to people?
I think I need to try it first,
yeah?
Just to make sure it's okay.
Really?
I don't want to suggest something that I wouldn't be willing to try myself, so, yeah, I'd have to try it first. But, you know, both couples I know talked about what a chore it was. It was really...
Yeah, they did.
And it's almost like, so twice a week ain't so bad now, huh? Because if you're really mean to me, we'll do it every night, you know? It's kind of like that.
Like that.
I feel I've wandered into a really bad place.
All right, here's your next limerick, Christine.
As Guantanamo pretrials close, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed shares woes. This sketch of my face is a glaring disgrace. I do not have a large bulbous
nose.
Right. Being seized by American forces, brought to Guantanamo, charged with being the mastermind of 9/11, bad enough. But an unflattering courtroom artist sketch was just too much for Khalid Sheikh Mohammed to bear. Upon seeing the photo, Mohammed complained loudly that his nose was completely wrong in the picture and that the artist should instead use his hunky 2003 FBI photo as a guide. Quote, I'll concede that the nose wasn't flattering, said courtroom artist Janet Hamlin. Co-conspirator Walid bin Attash, also featured in the artist's rendering, disagreed completely with Muhammad's criticism. He said, oh, look, that's me. That's great, unquote. That's true. He was very pleased with it. Courtroom officials, in an attempt to placate the disgruntled prisoner, agreed to let him change his orange jumpsuit to a color more suited to his spring palette. Very good. Here is your last limerick.
Bananas are quite a nice dish. Yet for sushi, we monkeys do wish. Since trees don't deliver, we've gone to the river and patiently learned how to...
fish?
Right. In another study showing that monkeys are more closely related to us than even we thought before, scientists in Indonesia have discovered that long-tailed macaque monkeys can learn how to fish. According to researchers from the Nature Conservancy and the Great Ape Trust, the new behavior shows the monkeys adapting to their changing environment and shifting food sources. Ooh. They secretly watched as the large groups of silver-haired monkeys rented their boats, stocked up on beer, and then hung around in the river until it was time to drive home in cars with bumper stickers reading, "A bad day fishing is better than a good day flinging poo." Carl, how did Christine do in our quiz?
Christine was perfect, Peter. Christine, you had 3 correct answers. I'll be doing the message on your home answering machine.
I'm looking forward to it. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Christine. Thanks for playing. Time to move on to our final game, Lightning Fill-in-the-Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
Roy Blunt Jr. has the lead, Peter. He has 3 points. Charlie Pierce and Amy Dickinson are tied for second. Each has 2.
Okay, we have flipped a coin. Amy has elected to go first. Here we go. Amy, the clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank. The Supreme Court ruled Thursday that foreign terrorism suspects at blank have the right to challenge their detention in U.S. courts.
Guantanamo.
Right. During his trip to Europe, President Bush said again that nothing is off the table when it comes to stopping blank's nuclear program.
Iran.
Right. After rumors surfaced that he was fighting lung cancer, blank issued a statement saying it wasn't true.
Paul Newman.
Right. Romania's Consumer Protection Office is investigating charges that the National Ballet's performance of Swan Lake was blank.
Obscene.
No, 8 swans short of the quota. The North Carolina...
That was my second guess.
I know. The North Carolina Republican candidate for lieutenant governor was recently saved from choking on his lunch by none other than blank.
Boy Scout.
No, Mike Huckabee.
He did same thing.
He did the Heimlich maneuver. Veteran ABC sportscaster blank died at age 86.
Oh, Jim McKay.
Right. A rather stupid criminal in Spokane, Washington, paid $100 for a color copier machine so he could blank.
Print money.
Yes, but what he did was he printed $90 in counterfeit money.
You mean a $90
bill? $90
bill?
He did $90 in tens, you see. Only could fit in the piece of paper. Ah. It's hard to say which idea was worse, spending $100 in a copier so he could counterfeit $90.
Oh,
or setting up his counterfeiting operation in the bathroom at the local mall. Local sheriff said, quote, "I don't believe he's going to be recruited by NASA." Carl, how did Amy do in our quiz?
Amy had 5 correct answers for 10 more points. She now has 12 points, and Amy has the lead.
Well done. All right. Charlie, you're up next. Fill in the blank. In Iowa, a deadly tornado hit a blank camp on Wednesday night.
Boy Scout.
Right. Meanwhile, across the state, Cedar Rapids and other Iowa towns were battling blank.
Floods.
Right. Belgian brewer InBev announced it intends to try to take over American beer giant blank.
Budweiser.
Close enough. Anheuser-Busch. Dashing hopes for a triple crown, blank finished dead last in the Belmont Stakes.
Big Brown.
Right. And what may be the coolest environmental disaster ever, a chemical plant accident in Ireland resulted in a cloud of blank being released over Dublin.
Guinness.
Oh, not quite as good. Laughing gas. Nitrous. After 7 tries, the Mars lander was finally able to get a sample of blank to analyze.
The Mars, the ground.
Right,
ice.
Soil, yeah. After a nail gun accidentally fired a nail into his head, George Chandler of Shawnee, Kansas, said the doctors removed it with a blank.
A claw hammer.
Right. Boop. As Germany prepares to host the Euro 2008 Soccer Championship, Der Spiegel magazine looked at Germany's greatest soccer quotes. They included the player who said, "Football is like chess without blank."
Boredom.
No. Football is like chess without the dice. Among the other great German soccer quotes, the coach who said his team's chances of winning were 70-50. The player who said that an absolute majority wasn't necessary, sometimes 51% is enough. And the sports writer who said that the score of a game was 1-1, but that it could have been the other way around. Carol, how did Charlie do in our quiz?
Charlie had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. He now has 14 points, and Charlie has taken the lead.
Well done. How many, then, Carl, does Roy need to win?
6 correct answers.
6, okay. Ready, Roy?
Yeah.
Here we go. Fill in the blank. The average nationwide price of blank rose above $4 for the first time.
Gasoline.
Right. An outbreak of salmonella has caused restaurants across the country to pull blanks off their menus.
Tomato.
Right. On Monday, blank introduced articles of impeachment against President Bush.
Kucinich.
Right. Once again, a small boy had to be rescued after he got frustrated playing with a claw machine and blanked.
Once again, same
yes.
boy?
No, different boy,
different
same
boy.
Action.
Got down inside the tank there.
Yes, he did. He crawled inside. A week after his brain surgery, blank returned home to Cape Cod.
Teddy Kennedy.
Right. The International Astronomical Union has decided that from now on, blank will be designated as a Plutoid.
Pluto.
Right. The Trolley Conductors Union in Boston is demanding that the local transit authority remove legal seafood ads that say trolley conductors blank.
Oh, something like, trolley drivers do it with a ding-a-ling.
No, that they look like fish.
Oh, that's right. They were actually...
They're cartoon spokesfish in the Fresh Fish campaign. In the Fresh Fish, get it?
Yeah.
And they say, among other things, a little speech balloon, this conductor has a face like a halibut. The conductors, notoriously and famously sensitive about their appearance, are not amused. Said one union official, who the hell wants to say they have a face like a fish? I happen to like to eat fish. And I like seafood, and I like going fishing, but I don't want anybody saying that I or any of my members look like a fish. Carl, did Roy do well enough to win?
He needed 6 correct answers, and Roy had 6 correct answers.
Well done.
So with 15 points, Roy Blunt Jr. is this week's champion.
Can I get a little bit up there?
Well done, well done. Now, panel, what will be part of the next generation of Apple iPhones? Charlie Pierce.
It will provide in magnificent high definition and 48-track Dolby sound, starring Christian Bale and Scarlett Johansson, directed by Steven Spielberg, a 45-minute advertisement for the iPhone 4.
Amy Dickinson.
It will lie to your mom about where you are and then hold your hair while you barf.
Ed Roy Blunt Jr.
This is sort of a down-to-earth function, but it addresses a long-felt need. You know how the sound of breaking wind is immediately traceable back to the source? People yeah. driving by stop and look out the window, and people come. Well, there's going to be a button, if you time it just right, a button on this that will neutralize the audio.
And if the iPhone includes any of those features, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
You bet we will. Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Amy Dickinson, Charlie Pierce, and Roy Blunt Jr. Thanks to all of you for listening. I am Peter Sagal. We will see you next week. This is NPR, National Public Radio.